Hello, you're listening to Romeo And, a podcast about masculinity, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society today. I'm your host, Street Saint. In today's episode, I'll be sharing a story about young love. But before I do that, I wanted to take a quick moment to talk about the previous episode, episode 1. In the last episode, I discussed The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and its messages about masculinity. If you missed that episode and you really love Spider-Man, like I do, definitely go back and check that out. When I listened to the episode again, I realized I made a pretty big mistake, or generalization, rather. When I talked about men, I was only referring to heterosexual, cisgendered men. I wanted to take a moment to apologize for that, since I didn't talk at all about the LGBTQ community. The LGBTQ community, if you will? Anyway, this podcast was designed to be about men. Like, all men, not just straight guys. I kinda dropped the ball on that one. And it's a pretty big deal, too, because the fact that the LGBT community... Last time, I promise. The fact that they exist already proves a point that I was trying to make about men. That not all men have the same desires. Men are pressured by our society to pursue and objectify women, but not every guy is even interested in women. Some men are biologically female. There are more sides to the story than what I was talking about, and what society allows us to believe. And regardless of how you feel about homosexual and transgender people, the fact of the matter is that they exist. They're not some made-up fairy people that live under your bed. They're real, live, living, breathing human beings. And they're not going to go away. Even if you pretend or pray really hard, they're here to stay. And since these people exist, it means we can't just ignore them. Like I did in the last episode of this podcast. You can't do that. Shame on you. And so, going forward, I'm going to make an effort not to leave queer people out of the equation, especially since they can shed so much light on the issues covered in Romeo And. There's a reason Juliet was left out of the title of this podcast, because she's not a given. Admittedly, I'm pretty biased toward heterosexuality, since that's what I grew up with and that's what society tells men to be, but there's more to the story than that. But speaking of stories, epic segue, I have a story to tell you guys, so let's go back to Romeo And episode 2. We live in a society where the media has a huge impact on how we view our lives and determine our priorities. As a young boy growing up in the 90s, I was pressured by the media to be a man. I was told to be strong, confident, arrogant, and perhaps most of all, crazy about women and girls. A lot of these messages are still the same today, despite living in an even more enlightened, globalized world. And because people, especially children, are so influenced by the media, I sometimes consider it to be like an additional parent at home. The media is an authority figure that teaches us how to live with each other. This is a particularly big deal for children who live in single-parent households, as I did growing up. Suddenly, the media isn't just another parent at home. It's parent number two, or even parent number one, depending on how involved your biological parent is in your life. And unfortunately, the media is not a loving parent, nor does it cater its messages to our specific circumstances. It can't praise us when we succeed, it can't punish us when we do wrong, nor can it correct us when we misinterpret its messages. Oftentimes, the media specifically tries to manipulate us into wanting and buying things we don't need. It's a terrible parent, but sometimes it's all we've got. As a result, a lot of children, myself included, have grown up with some pretty problematic views about the world. The story I'm going to tell you takes place when I was in elementary school in the mid to late 90s. I actually wrote this story when I was in high school. A time in my life when I was filled with angst about relationships, dating, and especially nice guys. A nice guy, for those who are unfamiliar with the term, is a heterosexual man or boy who makes it a point to be kind and accommodating, especially towards women. Essentially, a guy who is nice. But not just that. Nice guys aren't simply defined by their niceness. They're also characteristically unsuccessful at dating. That's like the big thing. The fact that the guy is nice is often determined to be the cause of his failure at relationships. And there's a lot of more to the story than that and the reasons why that is, but I won't be delving too deep into the nice guy phenomenon in this particular episode. But rest assured, it's a topic that I'll definitely return to a lot in this podcast. So if you feel like you are a nice guy, or if you're interested in nice guys, that's a big thing that we're going to talk about in this podcast. So definitely stick around for further episodes and we can talk more about that. In any case, in this story that I'm going to tell, our protagonist, despite being 8 to 10 years old, develops a crush on a girl in his class. However, he's too shy to talk to her. Eventually, after harboring this crush for years, he asks her on a date with some, shall we say, less than ideal results. Following the story, I'll share some insights about what I feel was actually going on and other things I've learned from the experience, so be sure to stick around for the end. The full story can be found on my website, www.stsaint.com/podcast. So if you want to follow along with me there, you can head over to the site and look for episode 2. And so without further ado, let's go right into the story. The story is simply titled Naomi. As an introvert, social situations have never been my forte, especially when it came to women. My first serious encounter with the female species occurred in the second grade. I was sitting at my lunch table with all my guy friends. She was sitting on the other side of the room. Her name was Naomi. Not really, but we'll say it was. I had never noticed it before, but she was beautiful. Her face was hypnotizing, her eyes entrancing. But most beautiful of all was her hair. Her long, golden brown locks ran down her neck and curled at her shoulders to perfectly frame her lovely face. I pictured myself as a Looney Tunes character, nose extending out into a snout and howling like a wolf as my heart-shaped eyes shot out of their sockets. It took me 2 whole years before I could gather the courage to even talk to my close friends about my obsession with Naomi. Unfortunately, none of my friends had any advice for what to do about my crush. We were merely fourth graders after all, and having no other direction, I had no choice but to turn to television as my tutor. And, as instructed by 90s-era kids' television programming, I stayed up late one night and wrote Naomi a love letter. It read, "Dear Naomi, it's Eric from your class. I wanted to tell you that I really, really like you. I wanted to know if you like me too. If you don't, that's okay. If you do, then maybe we could go out with each other sometime. I'll see you in school. Sincerely, Eric." I strategically left the note on Naomi's desk, just as we were leaving for recess. My hope was that she would find it just as we were coming back inside. Unfortunately, I had no idea if she ever found or read my note. I didn't get so much as a glance or a batted eye from her that whole week. Maybe she never found it, I thought. For the rest of that year, I was left debating what I should do, too terrified to actually speak to the girl. It wasn't until we were in the fifth grade that I finally spoke to Naomi. Our whole class was lined up by the door, preparing to go out to the bus for a field trip. I had been talking to my friend Mike about my crush on Naomi, and he tried his best to coach me. "Eric," he said, "you gotta just go up to her and tell her how you feel." "Of course I do," I thought. It just seemed like an impossible task at the time. The girl who stood just in front of me in line overheard our conversation and turned to chime in. "Who do you like?" she asked me. I shrugged. I certainly wasn't trying to keep it a secret anymore. So I figured I'd come clean. "Naomi," I said, and thought nothing more of it. Even when the girl giddily turned back around, it should have been obvious what was coming next, but I was not ready. A mere 5 seconds after spilling my guts, there she was, standing before me. It was as if the sea that was my fifth grade class just parted, leaving only Naomi and all her beauty. "What did you want to tell me?" she asked, innocently. It was certainly not how I wanted it to go down. And yet, there I was, staring into the infinity that was Naomi's eyes. I struggled to catch my breath. I opened my mouth, but nothing. I was paralyzed in my own uncertainty. I have no way of knowing just how long I stood gawking at her. Probably around 5 seconds. The concept of time was far beyond my comprehension at that moment. I might have stood there in silence for a good while longer if Mike's voice hadn't shocked me back into my senses. "He wants to go out with you," said Mike. Having no other way to communicate at the time, I just nodded stupidly. "Okay," Naomi replied, "as long as it isn't anything too physical." "Is that really it?" I thought. "What does that even mean? Do I have a girlfriend now?" I was too flustered to think straight. I was excited, but at the same time, even more nervous than before. Are we supposed to go on dates now? How does that even work? I had never planned that far in advance. I guess I just assumed I'd be brooding over her forever. I needed yet more guidance. This time, I decided to hire my older brother, Adam. "You have to call her, Eric," he told me. "Call her? Like, on the phone?" It seemed like a nightmare that wouldn't end. I was beginning to believe having a girlfriend was more trouble than it was worth. Naomi never gave me her phone number, but that was hardly a problem. If I was good at anything, it was playing detective. There was only one family with Naomi's last name in the local phone book, so I had no trouble at all. That is, of course, until I spent the next 10 minutes dialing her number and then clearing it from my phone over and over again. I'm not sure how, but eventually I compelled myself to push the talk button. Probably because if I didn't, I would have been at it all night. Hello? Hi, Naomi? It's Eric, from school. Oh, hi, Eric. Yeah. Hi. I wanted to talk to you about this, thing. What followed was perhaps the most deafening, humiliating silence I never heard. To this day, I have a phobia about talking to people on the phone. I'm sure that moment in my life had a big part in establishing that complex. Sorry, Eric, but I gotta go. I knew she was lying, but I couldn't blame her. There was bound to be something better for her to do than sit by the phone with me in silence. Yeah, sure. Bye. Click. I let the dial tone echo in my ear for a while before I hung up. I struggled to think of something good that might have come from that utter disaster of a phone call. Nothing came to mind. And despite it being by far the most embarrassing experience of my life, my brother then walked into the room, admitting that he had been listening into the whole thing on the other line. What the heck is, this thing? He asked mockingly. I clenched my teeth and tried to ignore him. Call her again, Eric, he said. What are you, nuts? She'll think I'm an idiot! She already thinks you're an idiot. He had me there. And despite my burning wish to simply curl into a ball and die, 5 minutes later, I had the phone to my ear, listening to a familiar, hello? Can I speak to Naomi, please? This is she, Naomi answered. Hi. It's Eric again. I waited. I needed small breaks from talking to prevent hyperventilation. Hi, Eric. I wanted to apologize for the silence. It felt awful to acknowledge that it even happened. Oh, that's all right. Then somehow it felt even worse that she accepted my apology. I was just nervous. Mm-hmm. I asked her if she was free that weekend, but she said, I've got to go to a graduation, so I won't be here. Sorry. Well, okay, I said. And having no other dates planned, and no more will to drag on this nightmare, I asked, some other time then? Okay. There was another silence, but Naomi cut it shorter than the first. Well, my dad needs to use the internet, so... Oh, yeah, well, see you later. Yeah, later. She hung up, and I sighed with relief. The very next day, my friend Laura told me that Naomi had broken up with me. Yeah, she said you guys aren't going out anymore. She called it off, she told me. After the fiasco from the night before, I really shouldn't have been surprised. Naomi had never even given me her number, and yet I called her twice, only to make a fool out of myself. Nevertheless, it still hurt that Naomi didn't even tell me herself that she was breaking up with me. It hurt even more when I found out that, not long after Laura shared with me that my relationship was over, Naomi asked out another friend of mine. He refused her, but I was still crushed. Dumped, rather. If anything, it was a blessing in disguise. how was I supposed to go on a date with Naomi if I couldn't even talk to her? To be honest, I felt as though an enormous weight had been lifted off me. I had been obsessing over the same girl for nearly 3 years. It's impossible to measure the amount of stress I must have undergone during that time. And for what? An elementary school romance? Unfortunately, instead of learning from the experience, it set me down a long road of similar failures and embarrassments. The story ends there. I didn't mention that this story is part of a longer anthology that I wrote in high school, which is why the ending might seem abrupt. But now let's get back and discuss some of the deeper implications the story has. Specifically, I want to talk about why many guys are intimidated by women, and the influence cartoons and other children's TV programming has on young boys. Finally, I want to talk about how this all feeds into the idea of masculinity, and the role men are expected to play in our society. So let's take a look at our first topic, the fear of women. Why is it that men are so intimidated by women? We often hear the other side of the story, how men violate and abuse women, but I feel that's only because violence against women is so shocking and depressing. I think that men in general are more afraid of women, despite us being called the stronger sex. In fact, I think a lot of men commit violence against women to compensate for how intimidated they feel about them. Similar to how people say sharks and bats and spiders, even though a lot of people find them scary, we say that they're more afraid of us than we are of them. But where does this fear come from? I think it's heavily tied to the male pressure to perform. Guys are told that they must have a girlfriend or a wife to be successful. But not only that, they must be dominant over her. So naturally, if a woman shows any sign of power or independence, it's going to threaten the man's status of alpha male. Some guys feel like they have to use physical force over women to secure their position and demonstrate that he's in fact a man. If we weren't so obsessed with telling men that they must always be strong and dominant and alpha, maybe guys wouldn't feel so pressured to hold women down. Maybe if we allowed men to be more sensitive and even subordinate, we wouldn't feel so intimidated by powerful women. Strength shouldn't be a gender thing. Anyone can be powerful. And at the same time, not having physical strength is not always the same as weakness. In my story, I'm so convinced that I must have a girlfriend that I'm willing to go through a lot of mental anguish for one. I mentioned that 3 years of my life is spent obsessing over this girl. All the while, I was punishing myself mentally for not being strong enough or confident enough to speak to her. If I allowed myself to be okay with being single, and okay with the fact that I was shy, I would have saved myself years of mental stress. Instead, I focused so heavily on these perceived weaknesses that I simply made them worse. The takeaway here is that guys need to be less hard on themselves. You don't have to be at the top all the time. You don't have to be with a woman all the time. And if there are aspects of your life that you don't like, then you can improve yourself without berating yourself for being weak. I also want to make clear that this isn't a woman's fault. If you fall short, it's not the woman's fault. Naomi had no idea I had such a big crush on her because I didn't have the confidence to talk to her about it. A lot of guys find ways to blame women for making it difficult for them. but frankly, it's not a woman's responsibility to make it easy for you. But let's get back to the topic of the media, since I feel that's where all this trouble begins. I mentioned a few times in the story how I used what I learned from TV to inform my decisions in life. When I first saw Naomi, I pictured myself as a Looney Tunes cartoon. These cartoons always depicted the male characters as easily distracted by beautiful women, often to a fault. When I decided to try and tell Naomi how I felt, I wrote her a note and left it on her desk, as I saw done in kids' shows as well. There are numerous ways in which we are influenced by the media we watch without even realizing it. The media essentially teaches men and boys to be obsessed and addicted to beautiful women. Just as women often develop negative feelings about their body image because of the constant bombardment of the ideal model body in ads, I think men see these ads and are subconsciously taught what to desire sexually. Any guy can tell you that the models you see in ads are not the only types of female bodies he's interested, if at all. In fact, going back to my other point, most guys would probably tell you that he wouldn't try to date a model because she would be too intimidating to him. Most guys don't want to date the women in billboards, and yet women think that's what they're supposed to look like, and men think that's what they're supposed to desire. And this is what I'm talking about. The media is screwing with our heads for no reason. After asking out Naomi, or rather, when she was asked out for me, I suddenly realized that I had no idea what my next steps were. In the end, I didn't actually want to ask her out on a date because I was too nervous to talk to her. I had no idea what we would even do if we went on a date. Ultimately, I had no idea why I wanted to be in a relationship with Naomi in the first place. I wanted it because I knew I was supposed to want it. Children mimic what they see. If dad plays baseball, Junior will be more likely to play baseball. If mom smokes, Junior will be more likely to smoke too. As I mentioned before the story, the media often plays the role of the extra parent at home. At the time in my life when the story takes place, I was living in a single-parent household, which, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but it was just me, my brother, my mom, and the media. The media showed me that men pursue women, and that's just what I did. I didn't know why, I just knew I had to.
You know what I am? I'm a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do with one if I caught it. You know, I just do things.
What would happen if we lived in a world where the media depicted women as asking out men just as much as men asked out women? What if the shows and movies we watched didn't show male characters as desperately seeking women? What if they no longer showed women as being rewarded to men for overcoming the obstacles of their story? I feel like we would be a step closer to gender equality. I mean, obviously the media is not solely to blame for our behavior. I mean, that's ridiculous. The media pulls its inspiration from real life. In other words, it's kind of a vicious cycle, where we based our actions on the media while the media bases its stories on us. That's why, with more awareness of how these messages and choices affect us, I think we can slowly start to change both our actions as well as what we put in the media. The last thing I want to talk about is introversion and shyness. I was a shy kid growing up, as you can tell from the story. Over the years, I've learned a lot about what it means to be shy and how we as a culture tend to punish and mock the shy kid. If you want to read more about that, I highly recommend reading the book Quiet by Susan Cain. The book totally changed my perspective on introversion. If you don't consider yourself an introvert, I still recommend reading Quiet. It's that good. I have a link for more information on it on the resource page of my blog. Once again, head to stsaint.com/podcast, and then you can look up this episode. We'll have links to all of the content that I talked about. Quiet should be on there. In any case, definitely check out Quiet. It's such an amazing book. But as I was saying, introversion is especially problematic for men. The reason for this, I shall explain. Introverts are characteristically less confrontational and more introspective. That's kind of their thing. They listen more than they speak, but their opinions tend to be more thought out and informed, which is the nice thing about it. Masculinity is often defined by how imposing and brutish you can be, which is something most introverts avoid. Essentially, male introverts are naturally at odds with themselves because they're pressured to be something they're not. Men are not supposed to be introspective and thoughtful. They're supposed to take action, start fights, be bold. However, manliness doesn't have to be about being aggressive or confrontational. Men don't always have to be the alpha, and they can be perfectly content in less powerful roles. Although Cain does mention in Quiet that an introverted leader can be even more effective than an extroverted one. It depends on the case, and, you know, she goes into more detail about that. But, you know, introversion doesn't necessarily mean you would be bad at being a leader. But sometimes we kind of have that false perception. Shyness is not the same as introversion, but shy people and introverts have many of the same problems when it comes to being perceived as weak. And if you have trouble in social situations, it's definitely a sign of weakness as far as we are concerned in our culture. As a shy kid, I had a pretty serious existential crisis growing up, because how am I supposed to be masculine and pursue women when it's difficult for me to initiate conversation? I couldn't simply be extroverted. That's like asking someone to, like, adjust their brain chemistry at will. And at the same time, choosing not to be masculine wasn't really an option either. That would have brought on all kinds of ridicule, and, you know, I didn't want that either. Luckily, I wasn't picked on or bullied as a kid. In fact, my strategy for coping with the fact that I had no good way of being a man was to simply be invisible. It was something that I was really good at, actually. I made it a point to not seem too needy or too smart or too athletic or too talented. I was actually better than most of my peers in my classes and athletics and creative arts, but I purposefully held myself back. I knew that putting myself too firmly in the spotlight would make me the target of scrutiny, and if I couldn't live up to the expectations of manliness, I knew I'd find myself receiving a lot of backlash. And I didn't mind being invisible at all. In fact, I enjoyed avoiding public scrutiny. It goes along with the whole shyness thing. But the one thing that I did want that I knew I couldn't get was a girlfriend. Because as a boy, I knew the only way for me to get a girlfriend would be to ask her out. No girl was going to pursue me. That was totally out of the question. But that is basically my point. Why is that? why aren't women allowed to ask out men? To go back to the point of gender equality, we need to be encouraging women to take the lead in establishing relationships instead of waiting for these relationships to just happen to them. By teaching women to wait for a man to pursue them, you immediately take a power away from them. You know, they don't have any choice in who they want to date. They, like, all they can do is just choose from the suitors that approach them. If we were to make it a point to encourage women as well as men to initiate relationships, it would take some of the pressure off guys. You know, men wouldn't be so desperate to pursue women if they knew that women might also seek them out. You know, as it stands now, a guy is thinking in his head, well, if I don't pursue this woman, I'm not gonna get a girlfriend ever. You know, because, like, I can't count on women to try to ask me out, because it's just never gonna happen. It's, like, not even a possibility. So guys have no choice but to, like, be, like, overly, you know, involved in this whole pursuing women process. And if women felt like they could ask out men as well as men asking out women, if it was like a back and forth, then I feel like it would cut down the number of unwanted advances women get on, you know, like catcalling and things like that. You know, men wouldn't be so overbearing in terms of, like, trying to approach women and, you know, present themselves to women, because they were like, okay, well, you know, if I don't harass this woman, maybe she'll come to me and say, hey, you know, you look like a pretty cool guy. I don't know. Anyway, who doesn't want that? To wrap things up, both men and women can work towards gender equality, which is ultimately something I feel everyone wants. Our current system seems to do more harm than good, assuming it does any good at all. Women should be more empowered to take control of their own lives, and men should feel okay to give the driver's seat up once in a while. My request of you is to stop demonizing and criticizing men you see as weak. Everyone has their place in the world. Once again, speaking from a definitively heterosexual point of view, if you're a straight woman, try asking out that guy you've had your eye on, instead of trying to subtly hint at him that you're interested. And for the guys, don't be so hard on yourselves if you feel you've fallen short. We all do sometimes. You don't have to be in control all the time. Let yourself feel vulnerable every once in a while. I've heard from some of my gay friends that they are glad they don't have to deal with the whole song and dance that the hetero community have to do. I feel like gay people can really bring a lot of insight onto the whole subject, because not only are they equals with the people they want to date in terms of gender, they're also minorities when it comes to their sexual preference. I mean, I would be interested to hear more from the gay and lesbian community about how they feel dating differs from straight couples. Or bi people who can talk about it from both perspectives. If you have some insight on the issue, let me know. Send me a message. It's contact@stsaint.com, or give me a call at 516-514-7878, or send me a tweet at @street_saint. I want to hear from you guys. What do you think about dating? Do you think it's less stressful knowing that someone might pursue you just as often as you might pursue someone else? Let me know. But that's it for this episode. Be sure to head over to my blog, www.stsaint.com, for a full list of episodes from the podcast, as well as other articles and posts on the topic of men, gender equality, and everything else I feel like talking about. As I mentioned before, you can also find the story that I told in this episode, Naomi. It's right there on the website, totally free. Although, if you enjoyed the story and this podcast, please consider sending a donation my way. You can also find a button to do that on the website. Thanks again for listening. New episodes of Romeo and are published twice a month, so be sure to subscribe so that you can get all the new content as it's released. See you next time.